Hello, friend. We are here to talk about the season finale of Mr. Robot. That's season 3, episode 10, shutdown.r. Join us.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
We are here to talk about Mr. Robot. We're feeling like criminals here.
Oh, yes.
It's the season finale. We're loud. We're live. And we're ready.
The OGs are in the house.
OG panel members. I'm your host, Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That is K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N. Mr. J.C. Rubio's in the house.
And we're all just brave travelers coming home. What's up, chat roll? What's up, bandits? J.C. Follow me at J.C. Rubio TV on Instagram and the Twitter. And big shout out to our co-host, Leslie, who could not be here this week.
It's holiday travels. It makes this all very difficult. But we're not alone.
Yeah.
And correct me, but I heard a little doot-to-do that we have someone else joining us here.
What? Do we really? Did she call?
I heard a doot-to-do. I'm pretty sure she called. She's at Hello Friend.
Guys, we have a very special guest on the phone with us live. If you're part of the Mr. Robot community, you will know exactly who I'm talking about. She dominates Twitter. She's got incredible information. I know her as Akira, but the world knows her as Hello Friend One. She's one of the biggest insiders, and I'm telling you, this is an awesome opportunity. We're going to fire questions with her. She's going to join the conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Akira, Hello Friend One. What's up, girl?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, we're great. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem at all.
Yeah, we just did this on the fly. We're like, we need the voice of reason.
True. Because you and I might not be the voice of reason tonight.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no. I've been communicating with JC for a good, how many seasons now? 2 seasons. So we've been talking about trying to either come in person or get on the phone. So he just texted me a few minutes ago, like, hey, are you free? And I'm like, wait, when are you guys recording? Like, oh, right now. And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, I'm up, so yeah.
Now, quickly, just to bring everyone up to speed that they're not familiar with exactly what you do, tell us what you do on the interwebs for Mr. Robot.
I run, as you guys said, I run Hello Friend. It's a Mr. Robot fan community. It kind of started as an inside of, discussion between myself and some other Mr. Robot fans, and they were just talking about the show and everything, and they were just, you should really probably think about starting up some type of fan community or anything, but based off of the conversations that we would have about it. And first I'm kind of thinking, wait, me? Like, could I really pull this off? So talking to one of my good friends who runs a fan community of her own, getting some advice, she said, yeah, sure, of course. If anybody should be doing it should be you. So I just took the plunge, started the Twitter account, and then over 2 weeks built the put the website together. And funny enough, on a couple of members' birthdays who are affiliated with Mr. Robot, the website went live, and I've been running it pretty much since then. Pretty much kind of a one-woman show.
And you're pretty much like 365 days a year. You're every
definitely,
day.
Definitely. Tweeting, retweeting. I don't take any breaks during the off-season. I'm, finding any kind of reason to tweet or update the website. Yeah, just anything to kind of keep the fandom going. As a lot of people patiently try to wait for the new seasons to come up.
Okay, well, Akira, this is why we have you here. So we're basically going to break down the episode and just talk about our initial thoughts and what we all thought about the episode overall and dive into it.
Yeah, so we'll start with you. What did you feel about season 3 as a whole?
Season 3. From the premiere, leading up to the premiere, because this season started in the fall, and we're so used to it happening over the summer, so some people were in their feelings about that a little bit, and I was just, going on Twitter saying, guys, be patient, it's going to be worth it, I promise you. And of course, I hadn't seen anything that was going on in the news. I'm pretty much reading everything at the same time as it goes live, so And also just, getting a feel for seeing.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Him and how he worked with the show and everything, and I was just, I think, you know, like there's usually always a payoff that they guarantee the fans. So I just said, be patient, it'll be worth the wait. And leading up to the premiere, when I saw the premiere, because I went up to New York for the Ecoin party, and as you know, they played the premiere there, so I saw it and I was just okay, like. To say it was worth the wait is one thing. To actually see the premiere a little bit ahead of time and have it completely like destroy any expectations, but in a good way.
And that Ecoin party.
Just, yeah, guys, I promise. I said it was worth the wait. Trust me, it's going to be worth the wait. And the season just delivered, hands down.
Well, then let's dive into it. So, let's break down the test.
So here at AfterBuzz TV, I like to start where the episode ends. So we're actually going to start on Fernando Vera and that end scene. I'm so excited because that's the most left field you can do because they tied up so many ends on this physical episode. Okay. That's looking at it on paper, that's the only place they could have actually gone. That said, I was still shocked.
Yeah, still shocked. Okay, I just had a feeling. You knew he was coming back. You knew he had to come back because everything's tied in. Because we're going to get into it because there's a few little nuggets that when we break down the episode that everything has a purpose. There's nothing. There's never going to be a loose end on this show. Mm-hmm. And Vera is just another example of this.
That's true.
You knew he was going to come back. The Brave Traveler is back. And from what we know, he's going to play a major part of season 4.
He has to, yes.
No, he is. He is, I think Sam Esmail spoke about that in an interview, that he is going to have a major arc for season 4. So he could be that new foible for that new villain, new but old villain for Elliot. So that's, now, Akira, any thoughts on that, seeing Vera back?
Wow, seeing Vera back. I mean, Vera, I think like you've been saying, he's kind of one of those characters who's always been in the back of your mind, especially given the way that he left in season 1. So you're just kind of wondering, okay, is it possible that they could find a way for certain characters to come back? Because, I mean, all of the characters, no matter what role there is in a character, I always say with Mr. Robot, there's no such thing as a small role on this show because even someone like Hamburger Guy has such a purpose for this story. But Vera has always been as you said, a big foil for Elliot. Mm. But especially with his mental psyche and everything, and considering what happened with Shayla, he ended up taking the one person that we've seen him develop a relationship with and a close connection with. So there's definitely still some loose ends there, and I really can't wait to see how they're gonna have that play out for us.
And that ties in. It's those little nudges that Esme will give you throughout the series, and he did it even in the open of the episode where the DA, Dark Army, breaks into his apartment, and he's hiding at his one place of solace now, which is Shayla's.
Yeah,
and now it's no longer a secret because Vera knows Sheila's place. He knows Elliot's relationship with Shayla. So that's gone as well. Those little nuggets, you know what I'm saying? Just those little breadcrumbs there. Everything's connected. Every single thing is connected. I'm telling you. I can't wait. Yeah, go ahead.
We're going to have a dedicated predictions time, but there's a lot of talk in our chat.
Okay.
Do we think he's DA? Do we think he's Dark Army? Do we think he's independent? I think he's independent.
I want to say he's independent because I think that it would be interesting to have Elliot have kind of two polar opposites that he's going to have to fight against. Mm-hmm. So White Rose is one entity, and that's a whole, and the Dark Army is a whole craziness on its own. And then you add Vera to the mix. So it's really, really, really interesting. But definitely with season 3, there were a lot of references to season one, even throughout the whole season, there were many instances where points of season three mirrored what went on in season one. And I want to say that Vera's probably independent of Dark Army.
I agree with both of you guys. I think he's independent, but I'm going to go a step further. I think in the end, he will be part of Elliot's team.
Really?
Yeah, I think because there's always been a bond with them. There's always been a connection with them. I don't know what way, what form, but somehow I think he will be Team Elliot.
Really?
Don't ask me. I'm just throwing it out.
Well, he still never got that hug, so he still wants to get that hug.
He really wants the hug. Okay, so moving on next with what
I'm just going to talk about, and I'm pretty much just going to like end on the barn, big blow up at the barn. So we're going to move on to Elliot and Mr. Robot specifically.
Okay.
Them working together, them having that scene on the Ferris wheel, and them really trying to like try to, because they're essentially reconnecting in a way that they haven't reconnected with each other since, I think, the end of season one.
Yeah.
Like pretty much like this is the first time we've gotten a, they both cognizantly realize that they're the same person and they have to work together.
And they said that throughout the whole episode. But the interesting part of that whole of the whole episode was that this time it seemed like Elliot was the one in the power position.
Yeah.
And I saw that very much. And I think this episode, more than any other episode, was Elliot's moment. It's like that, almost like that turning point. Like we're saying the first three seasons are almost like a trilogy in a sense. Mm. Now we're back to, you know, square one, but with new information now. You know, Elliot's in a new place now. He learned about starting to forgive himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had that conversation with Mr. Robot about, did you know about the buildings? And in essence, he was indicting himself. And the fact that, you know, Mr. Robot said, no, you know, I wouldn't have done this if I would have known that it would have caused the 71 buildings to.
Yes.
And in a great way, I think that was a relief for Elliot, because Elliot is always blaming himself. He's the cause of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's his fault for everything. But it was refreshing for me to see that now it's that part of him didn't want that destruction to happen. You know, because he's always afraid of his true darkness. Elliot has been.
Yeah.
And
he also thinks that Mr. Robot is the manifestation of his true darkness. So it's probably very relieving to understand that the manifestation of your absolute truest, darkest self is like, no, I wouldn't let 71 buildings explode. That's a lot.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah. That's... Yeah, and then also, I mean, again, going and saying that there were moments of season three that mirrored some parts of season one, even back to season one in the one of the episodes where Robot's saying, oh, you know that one building? We're going to blow it up. And Elliot's just, okay, nope, not part of this. Leave me out of this. Mm-hmm. And moving on. And then later on in that season, the whole plan changed, and they ended up using the heating and air conditioning to raise the temperature and just erase those documents, erase all those files. So we've even seen then that Robot will eventually say, oh, well, if Elliot fights hard enough, then it's okay. We'll find another way. But even then, even back in season two, when they were battling against each other, it's just, you know, Elliot, you're going to have to realize that you need him just as much as he needs you. So it was hoping that they were going to find some kind of some common ground here at the end. So I think that we've started to see it. I don't think that it's 100% there yet, but we are, again, starting to develop that integration, I guess, between the two of them, you could say.
Perfect word, because that's how Esmail describes season four. They asked Sam Esmail, how would you describe in one word season four? And he said integration.
Mm.
So now we see it.
It's the Green Hulk. They went from the Gray Hulk to the Green Hulk.
Pretty much.
I've always kind of been comparing Elliot and Mr. Robot this entire time.
Yeah,
to,
that's right.
To where they are. Like, you can say Jekyll and Hyde, but we live in a world where more people will get the reference to the Hulk than Jekyll and Hyde. You just got to go with the people, and he was Gray Hulk up until about now, and they're the Green Hulk, that they can pretty much switch in between each other and work together, understanding that there's two different entities that are the same vessel.
That's great. No, I agree 100%. So moving on from there, so where are we going from here? Do we want to talk about, are we going to the barn, or are we still holding off?
We're still holding off on the barn.
I want the barn.
I know you want to go to the barn.
Sorry.
But we do have to talk about history's critically acclaimed series, Vikings, which premiered with a two-hour season premiere on Wednesday, November 29th. Season 5 began with Ivar the Boneless asserting his leadership over the great heathen army, while the Gertha reigns as Queen of Kattegat. Ivar's murder of his brother Sigurd sets the stage for a vicious battle to come as Ragnar's sons plot their next moves after avenging their father's death. Bjorn follows his destiny into the Mediterranean Sea, and Floki, who is suffering from the loss of his wife Helga, takes to the sea, submitting himself to the will of the gods. This season is full of startling alliances and unbelievable betrayals as the Vikings fight to rule the world. Vikings on history.
Nice.
Love it. Now we can get an Angelin Price. Yeah. Oh. We're getting closer to the barn. Now we can get closer to the barn.
All right. Okay, so are we going to go there? Empire Strikes Back?
Sure.
All right.
I'm sure you can find tape of me saying that this was going to happen. This always felt like a possibility. I like how they did this.
Okay.
I think it made sense.
Yeah, definitely. I remember even from the first time that the two characters interacted all the way back in season one. And again, a lot of people were wondering then, okay, what was his deal with her? And the more we started to see the more interactions between the two of them in season two, again, people were just, what is the interest between that he has on her? And I remember reading at one point, they were, because a lot of people were thinking, you know, kind of referencing Lolita a lot and thinking that there may be some sort of sexual type of interaction between the two of them. And I remember reading that at one point they did have that, but they decided against it. And then again, looking back on it now in hindsight, think that the direction that they went in plays a lot better. And then also remembering back that Sam has said so many times that there was something back in season one that nobody had figured out yet. So I was like, okay, was that the one thing?
Do we think that
is like
that has to
be? Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking there was specifically a scene with Price and Angela's father. Angela's born, lived with father. That they were in a room together before Angela came down to greet them. So I don't know if this is the one thing Sam Esmail is referencing, but I do think there had to have been a conversation between Price and that father of, just so you know, just because, like, he's essentially in that moment the gatekeeper to who gets to talk to his daughter. So it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for Price to pretty much, just so all the cards are on the table, I'm this person. You can tell her if you'd like to tell her. I think it fits my plan better that you don't. I do a decent Price.
You see. No, but okay. With the thing is, I think I was having this chat with one of the fans. Actually, to me, this is probably the most telegraphed mood out of the whole episode. For me, it wasn't a big shock.
Uh-huh.
And especially with the build-up.
No, not really.
We spoke about it last week.
Going through Reddit, a lot of people were theorizing, okay, yeah, he's her father. So when the reveal came to us, kind of like, okay.
Here's a question for both of you guys. You know, we go down that Reddit rabbit hole more than just about anybody. I have a timeshare down there. But do you think it kind of takes away from our experience? Because I watched the show with my girlfriend, and she's seen every single episode. But the reveals, they hit her. She's like, oh my gosh, I didn't see that. And I'm like, come on. She's like, I don't spend half my day on Reddit.
Well,
and I'm like, damn.
I can't speak to people who don't spend half their day on Reddit because I'm not one of those people. Actually, that's not true. I spend more than half my day on Reddit. So I'm kind of...
You're a Redditor, I know.
But, like, realistically, this is a show with such depth that ultimately the characters are so well written that whether we're expecting it or not, the big reveals still resonate and the deaths and the deaths and the turns still work because it's about the characters and the story and the emotions. However... this show has so much depth.
Yes.
That subreddit, which, by the way, half the time is completely bonkers.
Oh, yeah. You got to see some of the permissions. Some of the predictions. I believe it was Ryan and Dillo and I had over the last few weeks.
I've been seeing Ryan Dillo man also in our chat.
I'm with you, my brother.
That, like, just... And I think we're at a point where I think we should use the Wayback Machine, or I'm sure you can find the archive posts, that if you read through... if you read through like season one, episode nine,
okay,
or like before the initial like robot reveal,
uh-huh,
if you read through what that subreddit must have looked like before that reveal, I think most of what everyone's saying would be like completely laughable. And I think that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Everyone points back to the one commenter on Reddit who predicted the How I Met Your Mother thing and like got downvoted to hell like three seasons early and got downvoted to hell.
Okay.
But like sometimes it's whatever that like one of these people is just bound to be right. And I think Dan Harmon once described Reddit and fans on the internet as a render farm. That your job's not to come up with the unthinkable twist. Your job's to come up with great characters and stories. Because the internet's going to figure you out.
Mm.
And I think even a show like this is proof that the internet is going to figure you out. For Sam Esmail to say that like pretty much every plot, twist, turn in season one has been found out by the internet except for one. And he could be trolling us on that statement, knowing that we'll never find the one. We could have figured it all out. But he just wants us to watch it again because he gets that money if we watch it on Amazon Prime.
Buy the DVD box set after it's done. Yeah,
yeah, like buy the DVD box set so you can you can scan it for clues and then make GIFs and then post it on Reddit and like that's.
I'll totally buy it.
I would too, but I think that's the added excitement, especially because you're part of a fan community. I think that's why shows like this on AfterBuzz do like networks like AfterBuzz do so well too.
Getting off topic, not topic, but I was in a Lyft yesterday and I was discussing this episode with someone, you know, one of the writers. We were like so bonkers into it. And we talked about The Barn, which is coming up in a few minutes.
We're getting to The Barn. We're still talking about Angelina Price.
I want The Barn.
We're going to The Barn.
Trying to segue his ass.
No one else wanted to go to The Barn.
All right.
Irving didn't want to go to The Barn. Santiago really didn't want to go to The Barn. Dom really was... Dom and Darlene were, like, captive to go to that barn. Yeah. I guess Leon wanted to be at the barn.
Yeah, Leon's the only one because
Leon was cool.
Yeah, he's smoking his trees.
Yeah.
But, all right, so are we there yet?
We can get there. We're here.
Steve, our lovely engineer, can you pull up the picture I sent you? Okay, I've got a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of fascinating. They're pulling it. In the meantime, let us discuss least favorite part of the season. While he pulls up the picture. Was there
least favorite part?
Yeah, because for me, this season, best season out of all three.
That's a fair assessment of this season. This was a very good season.
How about you, Akira? Favorite season? If you had to pick one, like a child.
Well, I would say overall that the seasons just get better and better. So on that note, definitely, I would say season three is probably my favorite. But I would find different things from each season that I love. With season one, it was just, even from the pilot, just within the first 2 minutes of watching this show, you're just like, what is this show? And I am going to be watching this every week. Like there was just nothing like this on TV at all. Just getting into the characters and the storyline. So for that reason, and then also season two, which I know was considered a polarizing season, but I really enjoyed being able to kind of slow things down a bit and get to know the characters a little bit more. And then with season three, it was kind of a combination to me of both more character development and then also kind of this fast action of season one. So it was a nice blend between the two. So yeah, I would definitely say out of all of them, season three, definitely so far my favorite.
Okay.
Which will probably change as soon as season four comes and goes.
I know. Oh my gosh. I love that you love season two. I'm actually on your team as well because I know a lot of people didn't like two. And I think it was
I thought two was necessary to get us to three.
Yeah.
I thought USA knew they had a critical darling on their hands, so they kinda milked it a little. And I'm sure if Sam Esmail had all of his druthers completely, season two wouldn't have been 12 episodes.
Yeah, I think you could have trimmed a little bit of it.
Even call it fat, but like a little. I think 10 episodes is the perfect length for something like this, that it's an event for 10 weeks.
Yeah, and it feels almost like truly on a roller coaster. Season two, yeah, to me that felt very Empire-y, like Empire Strikes Back.
Okay,
yeah. It was just long, dark. But the thing is, what I liked about this, and I've learned from season one, I used to get these comments, JC, you just trying to figure out what's going on. What's the end result? What's the end result? I've actually truly learned the show is about the characters. It's not about, sure, we want to know what happens next, the plot. Washington Township. Yes, that's the only thing that's driving me batty, but truly,
but
I don't care.
Sizzle.
Yeah, but I don't.
That's MacGuffin.
Yeah, but I don't. What I don't care. If at the end of season five, Elliot's running a lemonade stand, and that's where we end up, and I'm like, well, shit, I enjoyed the ride. I enjoyed the F out of the ride, man.
He probably takes Bitcoin.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying.
The SEO on that lemonade stand is probably ridiculous.
Go on.
Like, it's probably the top rated Google Maps.
Now, put your money on Dash. Put your money on Dash. Now, what I would say is, though, but the beauty of it is I really love the character. I am now, it's the characters. It's not the story. Yes, I need it, but the characters, man. I don't care what I love Elliot. This is weird.
Yeah.
I'm having like the biggest bromance right now. I truly love what I see. And I could say that more than any of my favorite shows of all time. This literally is probably my favorite show. And unless Westworld can take it out, but it's literally my favorite show of all time.
Westworld is.
Yeah.
Westworld's a show I question whether it can hold. Like, whereas Mr. Robot season one heading into season two, I was like, wow, this has so much momentum. I can't see how this could possibly do poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Westworld, I feel a different way. I feel Westworld let a lot out in the season one that they feel like they don't have anywhere great to go.
All right, we'll
you
get
can
into
tell it. We're stalling on a picture.
Yeah, we're still
we're having a great conversation.
Well, now Kira, you for the fans to know, just so we know as well, what's your handle on Twitter?
Oh, my handle on Twitter is H3LL0FRI3ND1.
Yeah, so everyone knows, go follow her. I'm serious. When we're going through like,
hello friend with the threes. Hello friend one. The threes are E's.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
When we're going through.
I wasn't sure.
Mr. Robot withdrawal.
Yeah. Just, when you're going through Mr. Robot withdrawal, this is a place to go.
I'm telling you, every single freaking day, she's got a nugget for us. And anything you got for us that we haven't even talked about yet?
Yeah. What's been going on ever? Pretty much started December 11th. Sin Addiction, also on Twitter. They every year have Sin Awards. So these are it's something that that's voted on by the fans. The nominees have been released over the past couple of months, and finalists and nominees came. Nominations was complete right just before voting opened. So voting opened December 11th, and Mr. Robot is currently up for 5 awards. They're up for Best Drama Series, Best Episode of the Year for what's the episode?
The single cam episode.
No, I think it's going to be the one after.
Really?
No, drawing a blank. No, it was
six.
The episode with Angela handling the hack and everything.
Episode
so,
6.
Runtime error. That was the line.
Mm-hmm.
So episode of the year for runtime error. Rami Malek is nominated for actor, best performance by an actor. Bobby Cannavale is nominated for best supporting actor in a drama series. And Sam Esmail is also nominated for Best Directing in TV.
Those sound like things they could all win this year.
So people can click onto Sin Addiction and find the links to the polls to vote for it. It's unlimited voting. Voting goes all the way from now until February 19th, and then they'll make the announcements on the 22nd. So. Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely be retweeting that link periodically. So, yeah, definitely go, you know, numb up your fingers, lose your fingers for a bit.
Nice.
Got it. So we have this picture up.
Yes.
So the picture of the top picture.
Yes.
That is in the lobby of.
It's outside of Krista's office.
Yes.
It's outside of Krista's office.
Waiting area of Krista's office?
I believe so. And this is because there's a lot of things that I came across while doing the research for it. And it's of three gentlemen entering a barn. Well, if you look at, and this isn't from season one, now in season three, pretty much the same barn. And we have the three gentlemen making their way to the barn.
So there's two ways to look at this.
Okay.
One, Esmail knew where he was going as early as season one, which makes sense because Irving seems to have been. There's no way you could have retconned Irving as well as they've actually made Irving. That it's clear he had an idea of Irving the cleaner for the Dark Army by at least the middle of season one.
Mm-hmm.
So it stands to reason he knows that there's a barn and a safe, because the barn seems to be very close or in the same neighborhood as the safe house that Tyrell was in most of last season. So. The easy way to say it is that Sam Esmail is that many steps ahead that he puts a picture. The crazy way is the roundabout Mandela effects, dual timeline craziness that I've espoused on this show more than one occasion. And then the third way is just happy accidents, which seem less and less likely in this show.
I didn't want us to get too bogged down with this because I know we got a lot of show to cover.
You wanted to go to the barn.
Okay, I wanted to go to but I wanted to talk about the barn because then if you open on season one, Ron's Coffee, there's a piece of artwork next to Ron's Coffee.
Mm.
And that same artwork shows up at the end of season two in the safe house where the Dark Army safe house.
Yeah.
As well. At Red Wheelbarrow, there's a mural of an axe inside a tree stump. So all this stuff is placed.
This is all intentional.
All of it's intentional. Even that painting. All of this. So now what we need to do is rewatch all three seasons, and look at every little detail. If we haven't seen it yet, we're going to see it in season four
or five.
You
get on Amazon Prime, get that daily 5.9.
There you go.
Got to get your e-coins. Got to get your e-coin perks.
I just wanted to bring that up. But okay, let's dig into the barn.
Okay, we're at the barn. So where we left them last week was Dom had Darlene in custody.
Correct.
After Darlene was kind of like it felt necessary to us because we've been accustomed to Darlene, but like if somebody only watched last week, I don't think they would have been on Darlene's side at all. But moving forward, Dom now realizes that Santiago has been working for the Dark Army this whole time. And Santiago's essentially taken Darlene probably to just get executed or dealt with to wherever the Dark Army is. Dom is afraid of Santiago. Santiago knocks her out, puts her in the car. They all go to the barn. And everybody else converges on this barn. Leon's at this barn. Irving gets called to, like, literally clean the whole situation from the barn. The gentleman whose name I'm forgetting, White Rose's associate.
Grant.
Grant. Grant is at the barn.
Yeah, Grant, you're always talking to Grant, aren't you?
Myself and the other ladies of Unmasked Podcast, we're all always having a chat with Grant. Even dating back to the first episode of the season, we were just, are you sure you want to be kind of questioning White Rose like that? you know, that might not be a good thing for you. And then, of course, you know, we'll get to that eventually because we are approaching the barn.
Because there's so many boss moves here. First off, okay, when Irving had the axe, did you for a moment wonder where the axe was going to go? Was it going to go to – were you thinking for a moment Dom or Santiago?
The screenwriter in me – and I think this is a problem I have watching all television sometimes. The screenwriter in me knows you have to save the cat. And if you're going to kill Dom, you have to kind of kill her off screen. Like, well, I know Walking Dead – borders on this kind of don't save the cat, everyone's terrible thing. This isn't Walking Dead.
No.
That Dom, like, they, if they were to kill Dom, they wouldn't kill her in a way where Irving, someone we spent a lot of time with, would do it. Because then we would turn on Irving, and that seems unlikely. So, once again, this is a screenwriter spends way too much time on Reddit person watching a show and just has trouble enjoying a show. But I think they also make this show for a lot of people, including people like me, and they let it linger enough that even I was convinced he might just kill her. And like, because also there's two ways. The screenwriting way is one, save the cat, have your lead character stay alive. But two, write what no one would expect and then figure out how you'd write your way out of it. Mm-hmm. So in that part of my mind, I'm like, I could see Irving just kill Dom as an exercise. Like, I could see that page existing in Sam Esmail's head or on his computer as what happens if Irving kills Dom? Where do we go from there? Right. What does that all mean? That it's not outside the realm of possibility. And that's a good TV show where I'm like, he might.
Okay. I think it would have been a horrible trope because of what happened last week. What we spoke about with, you know, Darlene and Dom. And now seeing this happen, I think it would have been a terrible trope. Oh, they got together, so you kill the character. I've seen that happen in so many TV series in the back. I mean, like when same sex get together.
That is actually a trope on television that I've never heard of until right this second, but you're right, that happens all the time.
Okay.
But I've just never thought about it that way. No one's ever pointed that trope out.
Yeah, it's weird like that. So I'm glad it didn't go that way. And more so, what I enjoyed the most out of all of it is Irving. Irving was stellar. And you sent me a DM about this that I was going to love the episode. And I wonder if this is what you meant, because Irving was just a boss. Yeah, I got a boss.
Yep.
The guy was. Are you kidding me? Bobby Cannavale? Excuse, Emmy, maybe?
Another one? Like, why not?
Yeah. I just...
Yeah.
What does he have on White Rose? Definitely. That's my question. What does Irving have on White Rose because he can come and go as he pleases?
Loyalty. Like, time served. I don't think Irving actually has anything on White Rose, because if he did, he'd probably use it to get out of this, like, to get out of whatever maze he's in. Like, whatever control, because I think White Rose still has control over him.
Right.
But I think he's earned a level of autonomy under White Rose.
So what was it that did it?
I think it was loyalty and time, that he didn't do what Grant did. He made good decisions, consistently made good decisions, that White Rose eventually asked, what do you want out of this relationship? And he said, I don't want to be Grant. I don't want to be at your beck and call. I don't want to be... I think I'd be best served if you got another right-hand man, and you used me in a position where I come in when the mess is so bad. Because if you really, really trust me, you should only use me when you absolutely need me, and you should have somebody else.
So he's the Harvey Keitel, basically.
Pretty much. Like, but if the Harvey Keitel, if the Wolf served under Marcellus Wallace for like 10 years,
mm-hmm.
that it's just like, I'm your most trusted confidant. I don't want to be your right-hand man anymore, but I still want to be in the fold. You can call upon me when you absolutely need me, but I don't want to be involved in your day-to-day.
Okay, Akira, you're going to have to break this tie, because I still say he has something on him, and Steve says time served. He was just a good student. Where do you fall on this?
I'm going to fall on the time served option, because, I mean, if there's something that he has on White Rose, I mean, we've seen Elliot own the Dark Army, and so far, what is that getting him? Well, that, again, still remains to be seen, But I think it is probably possible that it is the time served and the loyalty that he can simply come in and do what he needs to do, and then that is it. And contribute to the cause. And he just wants to go off and write his book, and I hope he got that milkshake that he wanted from the first episode. Irving, as far as that whole question, again, going to the question of, was it going to be Dom or Santiago? I figured it was definitely gonna have to be Santiago. So Santiago, you again have just made one too many messes to clean up. And also, the guy was not my favorite. I was even saying a couple of episodes back that Tyrell could have killed him, and I wouldn't have cared.
Really? So
yeah,
you just don't like watching characters like this, or you don't think he was well written and compelling?
Well, Santiago, I mean, I just don't really think. I mean, not to say that no character on this show is well written.
Well, yeah,
because, yeah, but I think, again, it's with a lot of the characters, what they usually always do is find a redeeming, some sort of redemption and moments where you could sympathize and empathize with them a little bit. But then again, also, given that everything with the show is still grounded in reality, there's people out there that it doesn't really matter if what their situation is. They're just not a good person.
Mm-hmm. I've taken Santiago to be a good person who's stuck in an unwinnable situation, and we've just yet to see it. That's how he always came off to me since the reveal this season that he's been in the pocket. He's been in the pocket of the Dark Army. We don't know what the Dark Army has on him, but it's something to the level of, I would imagine he probably has, either they got to him similar how Irving got to Dom this episode, or it's something even deeper where he has someone in the hospital that they're paying bills.
It's the mom.
Yeah, I think it's a level of they get to him through the mom and say the mom will only be okay if we're paying our hospital bills, and we're only going to pay our hospital bills if you play ball. Also, if you play ball, less people will die than if you don't. Hmm. Not even less people close to you. Like, I think, I'm sure he's been pitched on the idea that if you play ball with us, we can minimize the casualties on things like 5-9. And the anarchy that will ensue, and the 71 buildings, although he, you know what I mean? That I think he had to have been sold. Mm-hmm. I also don't think he was sold in the way Angela was sold. I think it was genuinely just in the influence of, you're in an unwinnable situation, do the greater good. So worry about you and yours, and trust us when we tell you more people will die if you don't go along.
And basically that's what Dom's going to go through now.
That's similar to what Dom's going through right now.
I think where we missed on Santiago, and I know we got to move on, it's just I don't know if they had enough time to make him truly a sympathetic character, because you guys are right. But we knew about his mom, but I think they could have devoted a little bit more to it so that we would feel that. I think we felt it in the context of now Dom's going to be the new Santiago.
I think maybe that was a narrative choice. Mm-hmm. That maybe they want us to think Santiago is just this faceless, two-dimensional, they flipped him. They flipped him. He must be a bad person. Mm-hmm. So that it's more impactful when we see Dom go through this in season 4. That it's like, no, Santiago actually, and maybe because this show is not allergic to flashbacks, that maybe we're going to get actual flashbacks of what Santiago had to go through. And maybe moments that maybe moments including that shootout in China that she like blamed him for, like, you sent people to die. Maybe we'll get a flashback where that was the best case scenario. They wanted to blow up a whole building. They wanted to take down a whole plane. And it was like, we can have a shootout in one lobby and lose 10. I think they lost 10 agents, 6 agents in that shootout versus they wanted to take down a whole plane or maybe they go that far as to show us like, no, his job was super important. He actually saved the most amount of agents. Mm-hmm. From his position, did the most amount of good he could possibly do, and that fits the show at least. Where do we want to go, Darlene?
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, please.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, I mean, I could see that, but also, since you mentioned how they got Angela involved, I think that probably makes a point too that everybody has a different way that they get initiated more so in the Dark Army, but. Because, with Angela, White Rose manipulated her and played on her need for that emotional connection with her mom and that need for justice that she, that she wanted to go and just fight so hard to get against Evil Corp. And then she said, well, how can you bring justice to somebody like that? So, just like definitely manipulating her on that and playing that to, like playing it like a fiddle, which I'm sure we'll discuss later on when we get a little bit more into Angela, probably.
Okay, well, we are moving quick because we're getting the hook. Actually, our silent string pullers are letting us know.
Yes,
that we're running a little short on show.
Well, so then we need to cover all the red barn. We need to cover all the barn stuff, and then we actually have to do a quick round of predictions so we can talk about Leon and the knives and everyone's turns. I'm trying to think what I've missed, just stuff that happened in the barn that we should really be covering. Leon turns, Irving turns.
Correct.
Grant is no longer with us.
No.
And the Dark Army is moving forward with all of these people in place, knowing that they're in place. Whereas before they were silent pawns, whereas now they're... Before they were unknowing pawns, now they're knowing pawns, essentially. And that they... Like, Dom has to know that she's... going to be working for the Dark Army. She's a hotshot FBI agent who's going to go far. Santiago's no longer with us. Irving is still Irving. He's still the cleaner for the Dark Army. And Elliot and Robot are together. What else are we missing?
I don't know.
I think we've covered the barn portion that we can probably spend the next 4 minutes on predictions because we like to do that here.
We need an after show.
It's... All right. We talked about Fernando Vera, so we can just kind of cut that. Do we think Elliot and Mr. Robot work together? They're specifically Green Hulk. That's what they do now? We've spent 3 seasons dealing with the strife. They're going to work together?
Yes. I believe so. We've closed... I don't want to say we've completely closed that chapter, because I think Vera will have a big hand to play with it, because Elliot has still another vulnerability, and that was his drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Vera may put, he may be pricking at that, I think, possibly.
And he's an experienced pusher.
Yeah.
Like, with any good pusher, the first one's free. Mm-hmm. And he's already at his doorstep and might already have the goods.
And remember, he's the one that got Elliot when he had, the whole time, Elliot didn't know that Shayla was in the trunk of the car.
Mm-hmm.
So he got played.
I do think Fernando's the perfect person to bring up moving forward with Elliot.
Because
Elliot does need someone to prod that bear, because as of this moment, it seems to be... good.
Yeah, so Akira, any predictions you see coming forth in season 4?
Yeah, nothing off the top of my head just yet. I mean, I always feel that with Mr. Robot, as you, as it was being said earlier, I'm kind of more so on the character side and analyzing these characters, getting to know them and wondering what's going to happen with them.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, as far as that, in terms of predictions, you know, Price telling Angela that, you know, the best thing that you need to do right now is just to find peace with what you did. Knowing Angela, she's always at that quest for justice, so I don't think that she's going to take this sitting down. So it would be interesting to see if she tries to go against White Rose, but also at the same time have that battle between herself because she still wants to genuinely believe in it. So I'm curious to see how that's going to happen, but I think the side, I think the vengeance side of her is going to probably win this one out.
I could buy that.
Final prediction, anything?
Okay. My final prediction is that what Price said about everything White Rose has said to be a complete fantasy, a complete farce. I'm not saying we're going to find out whether White Rose's plan is interdimensional travel or Mandela affecting or just Bitcoin, like large scale Bitcoin mining. I am saying that for Price to dismiss it, we're going to see more proof in season four that will refute the claim that it's all just a farce. That there's going to be more breadcrumbs left for us that, I don't know, maybe White Rose can control time and space. And a nuclear power plant in Washington Township and the Congo where you can get the minerals and a Hadron Collider all play into some weird thing where White Rose is either trying to control our minds into thinking that she can control time or she can actually can control time. I'm still on that boat.
All right.
I think that's a good place to leave it for the year before I put on my tinfoil hat.
And by saying that, fans, let us know what you think will happen in season four. And with that said, we got to talk to Akira. Akira, where can we all follow you again?
So again, I'm on Twitter at HelloFriend, H3LL0FRI3ND1.
And thank you so much. Yes, I know it's please. Late thank out you. There. Yes. I mean, thank you so much for giving us your time. And this show couldn't be done without our chat roll. All the guys Ooh. That were with us all season, guys, you know who you are. Make sure to... Steam, where can they find you?
They can find me right here, right now, in this universe. They can also find me on Twitter, at Steve Kaufman. That is KAUFMANN. You can also go to thesoberyear.com. That's a blog I do about sobriety.
And also, a big shout-out to Leslie. We couldn't have done it without you, girl. Hopefully, we'll see you next season. And follow me at JCRubioTV on Instagram and Twitter. And I've also got a big possible nationwide tour coming up, so go to my Twitter and find out later.
For everyone, thank you all so much for joining us. This is probably my last after show of this calendar year, so that's going to be fun. Thank you, and goodbye, friend.
Bye, Kira.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.